Welcome to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast, a weekly conversation about mental health, personal development, and all the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. For more information or to find a therapist in your area, visit our website at therapyforblackgirls.com. While I hope you love listening to and learning from the podcast, it is not meant to be a substitute for a relationship with a licensed mental health professional. Hey, y'all. Thanks so much for joining me for session 209 of the Therapy for Black Girls podcast. We'll jump into the episode right after a word from our sponsors. You may know Michelle Williams as one third of the superstar group Destiny's Child, but this week she's embarking on a brand new identity as an author with her brand new book, Checking In. In the past couple of years, Michelle has been more open in sharing about the mental health concerns she's experienced, and she's now using her platform to help others to have these conversations, to check in with themselves and others. Michelle and I chatted about the various parts of her identity she's had to navigate throughout her life, the experience of managing depression while being in the spotlight, and keeping some things for yourself as a public figure. If there's anything that resonates with you while enjoying our conversation, please be sure to share it with us on social media using the hashtag TBGInSession. Here's our conversation. Thank you so much for joining us today, Michelle.
Oh, thank y'all so much for having me. Like I said before, I'm a huge fan and supporter of Therapy for Black Girls. I think it's brilliant and it's so needed.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So I'm very excited. Your book is out.
Yes, May 25th is the release date.
Perfect, perfect. And so it's called Checking In. And I would love for you to just start by telling us what you mean by checking in.
Well, it definitely was a play on words as well, you know, from the time in 2018 where I actually had to check into a mental health facility. But I learned so much from that time going on 3 years later. And I added those three pillars to my book, checking in with yourself, checking in with others, checking in with God, no particular order. It's whatever way you want to do it. But I found that to be very restorative for me.
Mm-hmm. And that's also the name of your podcast.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Just to normalize people being able to process their pain and their trauma, their transitions, even their triumphs, that it should really, really help one's mental health.
Mm-hmm. So, Michelle, you know, I think a part of our difficulty or hesitation in checking in with others is that we are not always prepared for what they might say. And I'm wondering if you have any suggestions for how we might check in with other people and be prepared for the answers.
Oh, absolutely. There's a few things. If I am going to check in with somebody to tell them how I'm feeling, I start off by saying, hey, how are you doing? Hey, do you have the emotional capacity to kind of listen to what I'm going to say? Because this is just going to be go beyond, hey, girl, how you doing? Mm-hmm. And if they say, oh, girl, yes, of course, or then, you know, we go on to have the discussion. Now, if somebody calls me and say, hey, you know, I need to talk to you about something, I'm all ears, unless I'm like literally like not in a place to talk. But you make it a safe place. You be a safe person for them. Listen. Don't come off with solutions, because I'm a solutions-based person. The minute you tell me a problem, I'm going to go to Googling, or I'm going to go to things off the top of my head that have helped me. But sometimes some people just want you to listen and then just empathize with them and say, gosh, I'm sorry you are going through that. Is there anything that I can do? How can I best serve you right now?
Yeah, I really like that, especially around asking about people's bandwidth, right?
Come on.
Because we aren't always in the place to be able to, you know, even if we want to help or have good intentions, sometimes we're just not in a place to be able to do that for one another.
Yeah. And you might not know to say, hey, do you have the emotional capacity? But like my best friend, she's married and she's got two kids of her own. She's running two dental practices. So I always make sure, like, how's your day? You know, do you have a moment? Are you in a place to talk? And if she says, oh, girl, yes. Or if she says, girl, I got to call you back, then I take it as that and be like, okay. And we always end up connecting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So early in your memoir, you talked about how you changed your name so that it was more palatable and more marketable for yourself. Can you share a little bit about what that felt like in the moment and how you maybe understand that decision today? Mm-hmm.
So at that time, I am fresh in the group Destiny's Child, and that question was asked, let's consider you going by the name Michelle. It will be more marketable. And I really go into more detail in the book. I actually tell people the actual verbiage that was used. I can't give it away.
You got to check out the book for the full story.
You got to check out the book, checking in to get the full story. But I was like, wow, okay. But I will say this, you know, like, did I want to really like not be in the group because of that request? You know, when you think of so many people in the entertainment world who go by other names now, for whatever their reasons are, I don't know why, say, Chili is Rosanna, her real name is Rosanda. You know, Sunny Hostins, you know, we found out that Sunny is a derivative of like her actual full name. And I'm like, okay, well, Michelle it is. Now, it wasn't too bad because it's my middle name.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they just opened up a book of names and say, would you go by this name? It was a part of me. And so I think that's a part of me that made me feel better, but it did not make my mom happy at all.
Mm-hmm.
I named you Tanitra. I was like, yes, ma'am, you did. You did. But I think the initial reason why, I won't lie, it did sting.
Yeah. And I would imagine, you know, maybe at this stage of your career, you might make a very different decision about that, right?
Absolutely. When Kamala Harris is our president.
Vice president.
You know what? I've been saying that in interviews and no one has corrected me. Woo! Well, honey, we don't know. In 4 years, she could
listen,
be. So I'm going to just go ahead, baby. I'm just speaking that she is, you know. And then my mayor is Keisha Bottoms.
Mm-hmm.
Keisha. You know, I live in Atlanta and it's amazing. And so I'm like, I probably would go by Tanitra. You've got Beyonce, Calendria, and mm-hmm. Tanitra. So I don't know if at that time, would people have been able to pronounce these names? I don't know. But like I said, the initial ask did sting. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would imagine. And do you feel like there are any lessons from that or other experiences in your life that you've learned in terms of like advocating for yourself?
Oh, absolutely. If a person makes you feel like you can't ask them questions to a request that they have of you, or just, it's not that you're questioning people. It's just you want to get down to the nitty gritty of the ask. And so, but Black women, some of us don't ask questions because, like, I've been called combative. I've been called aggressive. And it's like, I was just asking a question, you know, and this could be a further conversation, you know, the times where I've had to be a little more high pitched in my tone to make sure that a person receives me well if I ask a question or my point of view differs from them.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of us are very sensitive to those terms being thrown around us, right? You know, because that is how people want to see Black women, right? As aggressive and, you know, when we are just asking questions.
Or it's like, I'm assertive.
Right.
You know, why can't other races, like a white woman can say what she needs and wants, and people be like, wow, she's so assertive and she just knows what she wants. But in my experiences as a Black woman, it's always been you're being combative, you're being aggressive, and it's almost just take what you can get.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, Michelle, I mean, I know for me, it feels like later in life, like I definitely feel like I have always been a little bit more outspoken. And if I see something going on, I want to talk about it. But I definitely feel like there are parts of my younger life where I wasn't as outspoken as I am now. I'm wondering mm-hmm. if you can share like what that evolution has been for you. Like, how have you reframed this idea around being assertive and combative in your life?
Absolutely. And it takes wisdom and getting the tools and how to say what I need to say and not feel bad for it. It's almost like writing that email, writing that text and putting your phone down to walk away, you know, until you can train yourself. And then I think at the end of the day, people will know your heart and your intention. Some act like they don't, but the majority of the people that I have in my life where I have to come in business with, within 3 minutes, I can sense who you are. I don't judge you, but I assess and I use wisdom in every way, in every conversation.
Mm-hmm. That kind of sounds like, you know, being very mindful about who's in your circle and who you really allow close to you.
Oh, absolutely. And then there are going to be some people that you deal with just on a day-to-day basis. I can imagine, you know, on your podcast or the people you have to deal with on the business end of it, you know, just being confident and try to be as concise as possible in your needs.
Yeah. So in the book, Michelle, you are very candid in talking about like your depressive episodes and your experiences with depression. And I would imagine, given what kind of is common around, you know, people's stories around depression, there's these ideas that, oh, you have so much going for you. Why would you be depressed? Right. Can you share a little bit with us about like what it was like to experience depression while also having some pretty major wins in your life?
Oh, absolutely. I tell this to everybody, you know, when people make that statement, it's like, you know what? I was dealing with depression before Destiny's Child. The music industry did not make me depressed. Destiny's Child did not make me depressed. This was something that I'd been dealing with since whatever the age is when you're in the seventh grade. That's when I kind of was like, I don't feel the way I think I should be feeling. And mm-hmm. I got the diagnosis in my 30s. So for me, I don't know where I would be if it wasn't for that time period of me being in music. It was an escape. It was medicine. The Lord blessed me with two solid friendships and women that I'd never had. So I'll first start off by saying that. But depression hits you no matter what race you are, almost no matter what age you are, no matter what socioeconomic background you reside in, honey. And it does not have a look.
Mm-hmm.
That is why people who die by suicide, there are so many people that say, wait a minute, we were just texting yesterday. We just went out for happy hour. It does not have a look unless you got that true spirit of discernment, like an old church mother that can see beyond. And I think that's what I try to do with people. I'm like, Lord, help me see beyond their smile, if there is anything to see.
Yeah. And can you talk about some of the ways maybe you masked that?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a pretty outgoing person, but at the same time, I like to be indoors. I think masking it by making sure everybody else is okay, because it would make me feel better knowing that, you know, oh, I know what it is. I could have said this in 2 minutes. Wanting to be needed. You know,
that's one.
Yeah. Wanting to be needed. Mm-hmm. We can just unpack that, you know.
And can you say more about like what the depression looks like for you? Because we know that depression symptoms look different for everybody.
Oh, isolation, a lot of sleep, no appetite, losing interest in things that, you know, normally would make me feel good. I remember on the seventh grade, it was those symptoms. My grades were dropping. If it wasn't for a mentor that I had, I probably would have had to repeat the seventh grade. They didn't know everything that was going on, you know, because I grew up in a faith-based family. My entire family is also known for ministry as well as medicine, but we're known for ministry. My mother's brother, you know, was our pastor. Then he was consecrated as a bishop probably 15 or some odd years ago. And so, you kind of had to put that smile on because people just know your family as this strong family, or I'd get pulled on to sing. We know you can sing. We know what church you go to. Get on up here and sing. And you didn't want to let the family name down. We were just known as this strong family of ministry.
Can you think about, like, did your symptoms look the same in seventh grade as they did in like adulthood, or did those symptoms change in nature?
I think they were pretty much the same. The isolation, the fatigue, not wanting to follow through with commitment. And I think as an adult, you must follow through on your word. There are so many artists and public figures who are saying the same thing. Let me just get through this speech. Let me just get through this play. Let me get through the fourth quarter. We just play hurt, literally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, in the book, you also talked about feeling like rage was one of your symptoms, which is not something we often connect to depression. But for a lot of people, and I think Black women specifically, like, that irritability is sometimes a symptom of depression that we miss. Can you say more about that?
Well, yes. Now that's a symptom that I did not have as a child, was rage. I was not an angry child at all. And I'm not an angry woman. It's just, I think, you know, depression and anxiety, they are responses, right? Is for me, they were responses. And the irritability was just one of the symptoms. And it's like, okay, well, how do I know that it's not hormonal? And ladies, that's a good thing to talk about too, is certain women, you could have PMDD. Our hormones, as far as for women are concerned, they just parallel so much with symptoms of depression as well.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, you know, being on birth control for a number of years, you know, and sometimes I just look back and like, hey, did that make it worse? I know it added an extra chin hair that I always got to pluck. Those symptoms can parallel. So I think that's how it can go undiagnosed or misdiagnosed. So you almost got to go back to even, okay, what was going on pre-puberty? Were you abused verbally, physically? Because I didn't know how to cope. I had to suppress it all. You know, it's like, you're a church girl. You know Jesus. You can't be sad. Everything is working out for you.
More from my conversation with Michelle right after the break. Can you share more about, like, what maybe navigating these conversations around mental health have been like in a family that is so strong faith-wise? Like, was it something that was understood, or was there some pushback around, like, oh, you just need to pray harder?
Dr. Anita Phillips is so amazing. She's a psychologist, but she's also a minister. And I've taken this quote from her and I've used it since: prayer is a weapon, therapy is a strategy. And those are for people who possibly are wondering, should I be a believer and go to therapy? Like, absolutely. You're a believer and you go get your mammograms. You're a believer and you go get your pap smears. You're a believer and you go to the doctor if you've had a cough that's turned into strep throat. So go ahead and do the same thing. Whatever your faith is, or even cultures, if you are African, Asian, Indian, you just kind of suck it up. It is taboo in a lot of cultures.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is why I think the book is so important, right? I think it just goes a long way in terms of normalizing having these conversations.
Absolutely. Normalizing the conversations, also normalizing and letting a person feel like they can say, I'm not okay. Now, I don't think you should be telling everybody, but just, gosh, can we just normalize to where you have a person? Everybody needs their person. And hopefully that person too is a licensed, you know, clinical worker. Because there are sometimes too where I don't want to feel like I'm dumping on people.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm like, well, therapists, this is what they get paid to do, is to hear you talk. But it's their job to even help you go to a step further by peeling back the layers, getting to the root of things. Some want to help you with solutions and treatments organically, and sometimes, you know, medicine is involved.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to something you said previously about the old church mother sometimes seeing beyond what's going on with someone. Can you say a little bit more about what that might look like?
You know, I've had some severe depression. I can almost smell it on a person. I can almost see it. And there are certain questions I can ask a person, and before you know it, they're opening up to me. And I'm like, I'm so glad you asked, because I can sense that it's something you're going through. May I help you provide a resource that, you know, can help you find the therapist? Because I'm not licensed, but I do want to see people walking in wholeness and healing. I do want to see people being able to process their trauma and pain, because a lot of what people are going through was inflicted at the hands of somebody else. And then there's a small percentage of our pain where it's been done at our own hands, right? You know, maybe we stayed in a relationship a little too long. We tolerated some abuse. We didn't get out when we should have, and that took a toll on your mental health. But I'm getting better at being in a place where I want to know beyond the sparkles. How are you really doing?
Mm-hmm. And that might mean actually checking in with people when you know you have the bandwidth to go deep, if they should share something that needs that space.
That's so good. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So can you share a little bit more about your thoughts about how we can communicate our triggers to our partners and family and friends and other people in our lives?
Absolutely. Communicating our triggers. That's another thing, because, you know, you might be afraid to tell that, especially if it's a romantic relationship, out of fear of losing the relationship. That's what happened to me. I speak about my engagement ending and how I was like, man, I'm a 99% truthful person, but that 1%, I should have said some. So it's like 9 times out of 10, your partner, they want to know what's going on with you. At least mine did. So I think it is very important to vocalize a trigger and say, this is something I want to work on. But when you raise your voice, even if it's just out of passion because you're watching a basketball game, it brings me back to hearing my parents yell. I'm not saying don't yell, you know, when LeBron makes that shot or Steph Curry makes that shot. Or when we're talking, don't raise your voice at me, period. You know, let's work on keeping the levels down. Now, I have to work on that, y'all, because I'm a passionate person. So my voice elevates the more passionate I get. But it's not because I'm yelling my voice out of anger and aggression or to overpower you and to intimidate you. But that could really trigger somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really think that those are the kinds of conversations that can really bring you closer in a relationship, even though I think a lot of people are afraid of it. But it is really being vulnerable with this
person. Absolutely. You know what? That's the thing. And I was like, transparency is telling a person what you've gone through. Vulnerability is being able to tell how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, I've gone through depression or a breakup. Okay, I'm very transparent, but I've learned how to be vulnerable. Like, okay, let me tell you how I really felt when I went through it. Ooh, yeah. I didn't feel, you know, there's a difference between being transparent and vulnerable.
Right, because a lot of us will come up with like a public story of how to share something.
Girl, yes.
Yeah, especially something that you know you're going to have to repeat over and over. Like, you get very rehearsed in sharing the details that make people feel like they know enough, but not too much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, but that could be a defense mechanism.
Oh, yes.
You know,
Yeah. So you already talked about, you know, like a major life transition just in terms of your engagement ending, but you've also had other major transitions, like, you know, the end of Destiny's Child, right? Like the group deciding that it wasn't going to be like performing and stuff anymore. Can you talk about what you have learned from these transitions about like redirection and conquering change?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you want things to go on and on and on and on and on forever, but be ready for that transition. Prepare yourself. It's kind of like, you know, that athlete that you're good if you can go beyond 3 years in the NFL, right? And so people aren't ready for those transitions. Same thing in the music industry. But lately, there have been more tools for a person to have a little more longevity in music, sports, and entertainment. When I think of 21 years later, the work that I'm doing still feels like the first day. So that's a blessing to have some relevance and to still be working in a field that I love and now adding more purpose in another area that I'm really, really passionate about. But yes, if I'm want to be vulnerable, the ending of Destiny's Child, it saddened me. Oh my gosh. Because I felt like I was kind of just getting my stride and feeling like I'm an actual member now. you know.
Can you talk about like how that might have been processed with the group? Like, were there conversations around the ending?
Not really. No, not really. Because I would have said, yo, what are we doing? What are you talking about? The end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's a part of why I know I took it so hard, because I didn't want it to end. And it's like, you know, you should have told me a year in advance.
You needed a little bit of
I needed a little more time.
Yeah. In addition to working together, you also have very strong friendships with your two other bandmates. And so how did that impact, like the end of the working relationship, impact the friendship?
The friendship moved. It kept going. And, you know, we are very close. But it didn't take me long to process, because I was like, okay, well, you were here for a short amount of time. The girls have been doing this since they were 11 and 12. So yes, it is time to transition. It is time to move on. And we've kept that promise of coming together every few years. And that's been a joy. But the real joy is the relationship that we have. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Kelly talked about how she gave us the Zoom link when she gave birth. I mean, you can't get no better and no closer and more intimate than that.
Yeah, it's pretty intimate.
Very intimate and very special. The reason why there's still access that we have to each other's lives, I think, is the respect and the ability as grown women. You know, we haven't had to have many conversations feeling wronged by the other. Matter of fact, we've never had an argument ever.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said from that.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. More from Michelle right after the break. So what have you learned about yourself, about how you prepare for major life transitions now? So you said you're somebody who typically needs a little bit more of a runway. You like to know when things are changing. And sometimes life affords us that and sometimes not. So what what have you learned about yourself in transitions now?
Just accepting that transitions happen. My father passed away in December of last year. And it's like, well, now, he was sick for a number of years, so, and his transition was so peaceful, and how I was able to process that. And then there are things that kind of blindside you, and I kind of deal with them in the same way, you know, because I refuse to go into a downward spiral. I have the tools on how to respond.
And what are some of those tools for you?
Some of those tools are, you know, stepping back from a situation, breathing, praying, you know, texting, you know, my therapist, because so much healing has taken place. I don't want to do anything that defiles it. Am I human? Am I going to make a mistake along the way? Absolutely. Does anxiety still come? Absolutely. I mean, I'm in my book release week and I'm anxious. I'm like, is it going to do good? Are people going to like it? How well will it be received? And blah, blah, blah. All these questions, you know, that are legitimate questions, but I don't let myself ruminate on things anymore like I used to.
Mm-hmm. That feels important, the rumination piece, because we can really get stuck there and like really do ourselves some damage.
Get on that cycle, honey.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. No, don't do that to yourself. You know, get somebody to process something with, but oh, when I see somebody just over and over ruminating, meditating on something, woo, it's heartbreaking to see.
Exhausts you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
So something that we have talked a lot about today, you know, in our conversation and that we talk a lot about on the podcast is maintaining boundaries. And it feels like from the very beginning, at least of your public life with us, you really were kind of set on having some stuff that was just for you and your family and some stuff that like was shared with the public. Can you talk about like how your boundaries have evolved and how you kind of make decisions about what kinds of things are shared publicly and what kinds of stuff stays within your inner circle?
Absolutely. I just believe in honor. You know, there are even some things I share in my book as it relates to my parents' relationship and what I witnessed growing up. You know, that's a part of my mental health journey. But out of respect for them, there's just certain things you're not going to go into details about. That would be my mother's story to tell one day. I really feel like my mother could, you know, really help other caregivers. You know, her and my dad were married 46 years with lots of ups and downs. And I think she could really be helpful. But that's her story to tell. as it relates to myself, I'm very wise on the timing and seasons in which I share certain aspects of my life, because you can mean well and you got to be careful. I'm careful of, you know, even the specifics of what I share details to. You know, in my book, I share as much as I possibly can, but out of honor for a lot of my relationships, you know, because it's not a tell-all, by the way. I'm not a tell-all type of person. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with telling you about an issue or a problem. You don't need all the details, but I give you the details that matter and what affected me and how I've been able to overcome and the healing journey that I'm still currently on.
And how do you feel like you got to that place, Michelle? I think about, you know, there are likely going to be lots of like younger people who are excited to pick up a copy of your book. And it does feel like in the social media era, there is a tendency to want to share more. I'm wondering if you can share how you've developed to a place where you have this honor around what kinds of things are important to share and what kinds of things are not.
You know, I think that comes from, you know, the industry, the time period in which we came up in. You know, there are certain things just media training wise, we were just taught not to share it. It's about your music. Every now and then you give a little personal tidbit because people want to feel like they know you. People want to feel like they can relate to you. Like, I understand there are certain mysterious artists, like Prince was very mysterious, right? Mm-hmm. And you still loved his music, but some of his truth was also in his music. But I do feel like, you know, now we just have to use wisdom in what we share. I'm not telling you not to not share things. My mother thinks that what I share is TMI. It's TMI, I said, and I know details that I've kept to myself and that I will keep to myself. Because if you want to keep access to me and vice versa, I have access to you. It's all about honor at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Unless I have permission, unless you've given me permission to share a detail.
Did you have conversations with family and friends in preparation for writing the book around like, okay, is it okay if I say this or not? Or do you just kind of go on your own like ideas about, you know, what kinds of things to keep sacred?
Yeah, just kind of my own ideas, because I didn't want anybody to shape my truths. And but I knew that I still will be honorable in sharing my story, because there are people who might have hurt you and they didn't mean to, but they don't deserve to be put on blast either, especially when you've reconciled and the relationship is okay. And vice versa, I've done some hurting and, you know, but, you know, just as long as we're doing our part to forgive and say those words, I'm sorry, I apologize. You know, I make no excuses for my language towards you or my behavior towards you. It is my responsibility of how I respond to you. And I'm sorry. And those words, my mother would tell me sometimes, someone saying I'm sorry can be just as powerful as the person getting on one knee to propose to you.
And are you having to have any of those conversations now, like as the book is preparing to be out in the world? Are you feeling like you need to have any conversation with people like, hey, okay, just so you know, this is going to be shared?
There are parts in the book where I say, out of respect for my relationship, I won't say this. There's nothing in there that I think is disrespectful. You know, there are certain names that I didn't even use. Mm-hmm. There are people still alive. There are people legacies to still protect. And that's just who I am. That is just who I am, you know, and nothing was done to me that warrants like an investigation or anything. That's different. You know, especially with my parents. And as they say, hey, you know, we were doing the best we knew how to do. That's like a healing salve for me, just those words, because our parents, they were going through their own traumas individually, the traumas from their families, you know, their siblings and their household. Then you're trying to raise kids and all of that. And, you know, there could be a lot that's said or done.
Yeah. So you've already talked about some of the feelings that you're having as you approach release week. Can you say more about like how you're taking care of yourself and how you've taken care of yourself throughout the book writing process?
Yes, ma'am. Literally pacing myself, taking times, pockets of time to, you know, watch my favorite shows if possible. I know today through Wednesday is impossible. And then I'm just prepared for it to be a week of a lot of work. I'm prepared to just be tired. And that's the reality. I can't sugarcoat it. I'm going to be tired.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know what you're headed for.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
So looking back on your life, I'm wondering if you have some ideas about what advice you might give to your younger self.
Oh, definitely pacing yourself, trusting the journey, trusting process and time. Time is so important. And what you do in between the time in your transitions really is very important. Sometimes what you do while you're waiting is so important. Yeah, I tell myself that. Trusting the wait.
Yeah, those transitions can be a very powerful time in our lives. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I am so excited that we've had a chance to chat today, Michelle. Tell everybody where they can grab the book and what they should be looking forward to.
Thank you so much. Like I said, it's been a joy to talk to you. And you can go to checkinginbook.com. That's just an easy link in it to tell you all the retailers of your choosing that you can get my book, Checking In.
And you are having some incredible conversations with other people as a part of your book tour. Do you want to share more about that?
I am. I have a book tour coming out, and some of my favorite conversations, you know, I've got my friend, neuroscientist, Dr. Caroline Leaf, Taraji P. Henson, Lecrae, Miss Tina and Latoya Luckett, Dr. Anita Phillips, Daryl Walls. Let's see, Devon Franklin, Chandler Moore and Tamar Braxton, Tabitha Brown. Listen, these are amazing conversations that I am delighted for you guys to be able to see.
Wonderful. We will be sure to share all of those details in the show notes. Good luck with your release.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, honey. Jesus, be a heating pad and a massage, a masseuse. Lord.
I'm so glad Michelle was able to share with us today. To grab your copy of her new book, Checking In, be sure to visit the show notes at therapyforblackgirls.com/session209. Don't forget that if you're looking for a therapist in your area, be sure to check out our therapist directory at therapyforblackgirls.com/directory. And if you want to continue digging into this topic or just be in community with other sisters, come on over and join us in the Sister Circle. It's our cozy corner of the internet designed just for Black women. You can join us at community.therapyforblackgirls.com. Thank y'all so much for joining me again this week. I look forward to continuing this conversation with you all real soon. Take good care.